College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. And we're here to talk a whole lot of stuff back and forth, banter, betting lines, predictions. And of course, we'll start the show with some recap from week one. Technically speaking, week one is not over. There is still a game tonight. I'm sure my co-host will tell you all about it because his man is kind of coaching tonight. He's not actually coaching, but we'll get into that in just a little bit. But we did have an interesting, somewhat drama-filled, some lackluster performance that you somewhat expect in week one, especially if you're going against a good team sometimes. Maybe you have a big matchup coming up in week two or week three, and you don't want to show much, and you kind of underwhelm against a team that shouldn't be really with you on the field. But we are going to break down and recap week one. You know, there was some big games, definitely a surprise defensive battle with Georgia and Clemson. Georgia, their defense is damn good and has been, but that offensive line from Clemson, because, you know, that quarterback that they have can move. He's not like just some non-mobile pocket passer. That's all he can do. He was getting destroyed. Speaking of getting destroyed, Miami, once they had it first and goal and went all the way to fourth and goal, I think they went back-to-back plays, quick run plays at the goal line, and that was the closest they got it. They missed a field goal too, I believe. Could have been 27-20, I believe, but man, they just got ran off the field. Alabama looked good. Virginia Tech snuck up on on North Carolina, who was a team that's supposed to win the Coastal. Of course, who knows who's going to win the Coastal? That's kind of we talked about that last week, everything. So we'll talk a little bit more, you know, talk about no-shows. Indiana, where are you, Indiana? I guess it's not basketball season yet. That was kind of crazy. Penn State snuck by Wisconsin. That quarterback definitely had some blues. And then last night, Notre Dame, Florida State. Florida State makes it a great game down the stretch after trailing by 18. And a scenario that's played out for a fair amount of times in Florida State over the last 30, 40 years. Wide something, whether it be left or right. So we're going to break it all down. Then, of course, we're going to preview and predict week two. Oregon and Ohio State definitely stand out as a great matchup, as does Iowa and Iowa State. There's a variety of other games that are maybe not the marquee matchups, but are kind of flying under the radar. Like I said, we do talk some betting lines and predictions. And of course, we end the show with the crappy pick of the week, where my co-host just throws me blind a game to predict. And then we have a fun segment, you know, after that as well. Well, it's all kind of one segment, I should say, but it's 1-0 so far. So we're going to get into this in just a second. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You don't have to go to blogtalk and ropeadope and download the show directly there or listen to the browser. You can find this year college football show under the Ropeadope Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, and a whole lot of other places. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a lot of places. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. That used to be AT&T TV. It's now DirecTV Stream. Same prices that it starts at, $69.99 a month. No annual contract. The cloud DVR is available. You can stream it anywhere on any device. So you can get live cable and a bunch to choose from on demand. And if you sign up for the choice package and above, you do get three free months, no charge of HBO Max. That's DirecTV Stream. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host into the fray and seeing how he's doing on this Labor Day. A lot of times working at a bar in the past, I've had to work Labor Day. I don't have to do it, and I haven't had to do it lately in the last chunk of years. But I always kind of found it a little funny working on Labor Day when you think of the actual holiday labor, right? So how are you doing on what seems to be a great afternoon in Texas, as it is up here at the top of the country in Minnesota? It's like 79 degrees, 81 degrees, just nice today. How you doing, Marshall?
Yeah, it's been a pretty good day. Ran around town with a girlfriend, did some errands. Some sad news, though, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to our podcast watched the great show The Wire. But Omar Little, our Chalky White and Boardwalk Empire, the great Omar Little passed away today. So that is some sad news. If you're a Wire fan, a lot of people, he was probably one of the greatest TV character shows of all time, and obviously was a person too. So that was sad news to see on social media. So RIP, that guy was a hell of an actor. So that was sad news to hear about. But aside from that, yes, it has been a very good day. So I guess I'll just have to rewatch The Wire again, remember the greatness of Omar Little. But yeah, besides that, Chris, everything's going pretty well, my friend. I have I always kind of start off with an opening rant or story. And I'm going to talk about a team that I guarantee you would not have me predicted starting the show off with. But there was like such a memorable moment. I feel it's worth a minute of sarcasm.
Deion Sanders University, or what are we starting with?
No. This is a school who I would say in most people's minds is one of the worst programs in college football history and has been for the past 20 years. So for the FCS, like for lower division, there's always been North Dakota State has won like 7 out of like 9 titles in the past 9 years. And they beat the Gophers. They beat Kansas State. They beat a lot of good teams. And South Dakota State's always been good, too. But there is a school named South Dakota who isn't that good, who traveled down to Kansas. And Chris, I shit you not, the Kansas Jayhawks stormed the field, their home turf, after beating a school named South Dakota. They stormed their home turf, beating South Dakota, I believe it was 17-13. It was their first win since 2019. But how bad is it that you storm the field when beating a division opponent who is a rank lower than you, who's not even a prominent division FCS team? My buddy is always giving me shit because there was the one time where Carolina stormed the court against Duke, and it was like, you know, this I think was like 09 or one of their better years, and he's like, dude, how can you do that? And you know, you can kind of argue that back and forth, but like, dude, KU stormed the field against beating South Dakota. So I just wanted to share that tidbit in there. I mean, hey
the freshmen and the sophomores at the school student section, dude, they've never seen this type of success.
They could be thinking, hey, I'm going to I might have to go football games here more often at KU. This could be a thing.
Dominated South Dakota, bro.
Yeah, they could say they're on the rise. Mm-hmm. you can't get worse. So maybe they're on to something. Maybe this is the year KU wins another game.
Possibly. Hold on. Let's not get carried away. Was it a game and a half that they were favored this year to win?
It had to be right around there, my friend. But
maybe it was 0.5. Like, they're not sure they can win a game. We'll give them 0.7.
But if you are a Midwestern football fan, because they're now different conferences, you can now say that the Kansas Jayhawks are off to a better start than the good old Nebraska Cornhuskers, who Scott Frost is starting another year with abysmal. I mean, Chris, we've given Harbaugh a lot of shit, and he's probably deserved it. And I feel that this leash, and not that we got to spend a whole lot of time in Nebraska, but like, this guy had a tremendous run at UCF, like a really good run.
Yeah.
And went back to his alma mater, where he was part of one of the most, for like a 3-year run, one of the most dominant runs in college football. And you'd assume that he was going to kind of take them back from glory, because Nebraska has had good coaches, but for various reasons, they've gotten rid of guys, for whether it be comments they made or pressure from the fan base. But, and again, when I was growing up, becoming a college football fan, they were one of the proudest schools in the country. I got to imagine, Chris, that his leash at Nebraska can't be much more than this year, because this guy has, I mean, I'm not saying he's going on social media and saying, hey, we're going to run the table and be undefeated, but the expectations for them, he can't have much time left, because they've really been disappointed since he's been there. And I'm surprised that he's not been able to, whether it's been recruiting or finding a quarterback or just bringing wins to a team that you'd assume they're kind of in their own little part of the country geographically. I'm really surprised that he's not gotten the team better at all in his time there.
Okay, that's enough Cornhusker talk for the whole year.
Fair enough.
And I do have to correct you a little bit. Tommy Frazier might have something to say about who was the quarterback during their peak time, okay? You got to rewind the clock about, give or take, 5-6 years.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, he came right out.
Let's calm
he came
down.
After Frazier, right?
Let's calm down right, a little bit right. With Frost, because they got ran off the field from the best team in history, 2001 Miami Hurricanes. But anyway, that's enough. That's enough. We're not going to talk much about the Hurricanes either, to be honest with you. We'll kind of combo it because it was a non-game for the most part, kind of early and often. Like I said, they had that moment to get within range to be like, okay, I'm feeling a little better. I'm feeling a little, but they faltered on two back-to-back, not goal line, like they were right on the one. They were on the 1.5 after third down. But then they did, you know, on third down and fourth down, they did the rush plays, and it almost seemed like, sure, you're supposed to throw off the defense a little bit, catch them slipping, but it seemed like the Hurricanes weren't lined up that well either, which that's going to screw up the whole thing. I maybe would have liked a timeout, but either way, after that, you know, a lot of people were talking about the quarterback there for Alabama having that $1 million endorsement deal. Well, he lived up to it on Saturday afternoon, so we could talk minorly about that because they look good, but really
true.
The high-profile game, Georgia and Clemson, wow. I mean, it's not like Georgia came out and played great. They did manage 121 rushing yards, which isn't really that much in college football, but when the other team has 23 carries for 2 yards, a lot of that is sacks. They count that as sacks rushing yards, sacks. In college, so you had 14 carries, negative 22. That's negative 1.6 for DJ, the quarterback there. I mean, that is really, really rough. Through the air, he threw a pick, but, you know, it was just ugly. And I did not expect – we talked about it off air right before we started. The over-under was set at like 51, I think you said. I did not expect for, one, the defensive line and just the blitzes – from Georgia to hit home that much. And two, and I think more importantly, that offensive line looks like a mess. And trust me, as a Minnesota Vikings fan these last few years, I know what a bad interior offensive line looks like. That shit was ugly.
I think that, and you saw this, actually, and we'll get to him throughout the podcast, because I have a couple of quarterbacks who I just think were absolutely atrocious this first week. But you've it kind of like in baseball when a season starts, the pitchers have the advantage over the hitters. I think in some extent, Chris, that you're seeing a lot very of true. lower scoring games. And I think you can do the baseball pitchers parallel to defenses over offenses. And it's not so much there's a skill differential, but some of these quarterbacks, just last year was a weird year. It could be a new offense, could be a new coordinator. Maybe he is a new quarterback.
They don't get the preseason either. You know, they don't get an extra game in there or nothing.
Yeah. And I think you saw a lot of quarterbacks who have a ranked number next to their team that just didn't play that well. And they probably will progress throughout the year. But yeah, there was a lot of really poor performances of quarterbacks this week with ranked teams. And the quarterbacks looked like trash. But again, this is maybe the first road game you've had in your last 2 years. I know it was really, really cool to see. Virginia Tech knew the Enter Sandman, because I mean that's fun. But you know, we've
that
not
long
had that.
Shot they had of the stadium was like, oh wow, it's back.
And I was watching the Badgers game, and Gus Johnson just getting excited for a jump around in the third quarter when they play that song in Madison. Like they said, it's the first time they've done that in 615 days. So there were a lot of maybe differences quarterbacks have not gotten used to, but you were also still the quarterback of a university with a lot of name on your, you know, name and money and pride on your back, and they didn't perform. and see Dabo Clemson's offense score 3 points in a game, which I can imagine has not happened for a super, super long time. Credit to Georgia. I mean, their defensive line, I'm actually rewatching the game now, and it's just there was chaos from the start. And it was all there was no run game. The quarterback looked a little nervous. Clearly, this was his first big game stage, and he probably would have preferred to play a South Carolina State for a warm-up game, but he got Georgia. Yeah, it was just made a lot of these quarterbacks probably need a couple of weeks and to get into the flow. But if you were facing the right team, time to step it up now. And a lot of guys struggled. And I think a lot of these quarterbacks, Chris, will progress throughout the year. But yeah, 3 points in a game. And Georgia held Georgia only scored 10. Now, obviously, 10 was enough for the win. But Georgia's normally a team that's going to run the ball really, really well and normally have like one kind of freakish wide receiver who head to the NFL. So even their low numbers were surprising as well. But the biggest thing, I think, aside from complimenting Georgia's defense, Chris, is the fact that Clemson lost this game and North Carolina lost. And obviously Clemson is a team who always kind of has been that shoo-in to make the Final Four or whatever, the championship. Where's your big win going to come now? Because you've always dominated a conference that's not that high on par compared to like the SEC or Big 12. This could be a big blow. I mean, I know we're kind of going big picture here, but this could be a huge loss for Clemson because your conference isn't that strong. And if you're Georgia, this can maybe be a confidence booster you really needed for a team who's always kind of been the little brother gets beat up all the time against Bama.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we should preference is Clemson within the first four-ish games, maybe just in September or whatever, early October, does kind of have a stinker, whether they win it or not. Sometimes they lose early and then they can, you know, come back and win the, you know, the rest of the remaining games. Maybe they have a good game in there against a ranked opponent. And then, you know, maybe Florida State's going to be better than we thought based off last night. But you're right. That is true. Virginia Tech, you know, they'll have a conference final there that will help them. But yeah, that, I mean, maybe just the name recognition plays into it. But yeah, it is a good point. And now when you look at their last two games against high profile teams, they've had major, major struggles on the offensive line because Ohio yes. State came in last year thinking, man, you know, they lost Chase Young and, you know, their ends didn't look that great, but they looked great against that team last year. And the number one pick in the draft didn't look good in that game. It wasn't as nasty as this game, but hey, they've probably lost some guys. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, but we should preference it by saying Clemson, they're not Clemsoning like they did a decade ago, but they do have some stinkers where they just grind out a win that they probably should have lost, or they just lose and then bounce back. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that in general. Like you said, no matter what, though, they probably will be a one-loss team, at max two-loss probably, and that will look good for Georgia regardless as a non-conference, no doubt about it. Let's go back-to-back with these two games. Very similar scenario here. We got a tight game and a blowout. The blowout, though, kind of shocking. Not shocking that Iowa won, but 34-6. And this kind of plays into what you're talking about. Penix Jr., three picks, couldn't really get a great rushing game going. And it's not like, you know, Iowa set the world on fire. Now, they ran the ball really well. Goodson had that long run, 56-yard run. So that kind of, you know, that's 50 of the 158 that they got in general. So they ran the ball well, no doubt about it. They just got an early lead and never really gave it up. But that was a shocker that they just slapped Indiana around. But like I said, it does kind of play off what you're saying about these early quarterbacks having an issue. And speaking of, we'll double dip on this. Penn State goes into Badger land and beats Bucky 16-10. And, you know, I don't have to say much about quarterbacking there in Mertz. Some really head scratchers. You know, they had a running back that had 31 carries, buck 21, 3.9. They actually, you know, they ran the ball pretty well, but Mertz was just, you know, ever since he's had that 5-touchdown game and then went to State Street and just partied and got COVID. It just doesn't seem like he's the same guy. I know that's last year and everything like that. But defense wins championships in both those defense, Iowa and Penn State, look pretty damn good. What did you think of those two games?
Okay, so I'll get my rant done here quick. Mertz was absolutely hideous. Just bad. And it was unfortunate too. I mean, I bet them to win. I thought the Badgers would win. The main person I guess I listened to for advice said if the Badgers controlled the line of scrimmage, they should win the football game pretty easily. I had to text my buddy, in soccer now they have these things where if you watch a soccer game, there's the expected goals a team should score after a game. So it kind of gives you the perception of, analytically, how many goals a team should have scored. Well, if there had been that for the football game, it would have, the Badgers total probably at least should have been 28 points. They had four red zone trips and one resulted in a touchdown. Three of them were turnovers, and it was really, really bad. He had three fumbled snaps. He had two turnovers to two interceptions to finish the game. One was on the 3-yard line. One was in the red zone trying to get a win at the end. I just can't believe how bad the guy played. And Maluzzi, who is a running back they got from the SEC, actually 31 carries, 121. That's not great numbers for college, but he was pretty effective, and he showed bursts of being another quality Badger running back. But, yeah, this Mertz guy, man, like you said, he had a great game one last year against Illinois, and since then it's been downhill. His quarterback rating was an 18.5. And I know it's only two interceptions, but it felt he threw four or five.
That's bad. I didn't even know that stat existed.
Yeah, and I just – And I was, again, conversing with my buddy about this. Sometimes you can blame a running back or a quarterback. One can take the blame. One or the other can take a blame for handoffs. But when you have three miscued handoffs, it's like, dude, that's got to be on the quarterback for the most part. Because, that's something where if you're a college quarterback, that's an expectation for your job. And there was actually one play where he was handing the ball to the running back. And since his posture wasn't proper, and even the announcers did a good job talking about it, he literally tripped the running back after he handed the ball off to him because he just didn't plant his feet how he should. So the running back got the ball and he literally tripped him. Mertz looked like trash. And Clifford, the Penn State quarterback, was trash too. But the Badgers secondary was so awful. And I'm not lying to you, Chris. Every big pass they threw down the field and they completed, there was no one within 5 to 7 yards of the guys. His numbers looked okay, but I think Clifford's awful too. I saw a press clipping that Franklin's been saying the backup quarterback in Penn State's looked better in their preseason. And that could be true because Clifford didn't look good, but you and I could have completed passes to some of these guys. Cause I don't care who you are. If you're playing college football and your wide receiver's open by 5 to 6 yards, you can probably drop a dime for him. And so that Badger secondary, I don't know what they were smoking because they were bad too. So that was a hideous football game. But hey, if you're Penn State, I will tip the cap to the Penn State defense because they were on the field for a huge chunk of the game. Time of possession had to be completely staggering because
it was 42-51 to 17-09. I was going to bring that up.
Jesus. So I will tip my cap to Penn State's defense because they literally bend but didn't break. And both offenses were bad. The Badgers secondary was atrocious. The Badgers always have normally a pretty good front seven, but yeah, a lot of things to work on. But yeah, if you're Mertz, who is the quarterback for the Badgers now, and they sent Cohn to go to Notre Dame, at least Cohn at Notre Dame looked better last night than what Mertz showed. But that was a tough one to watch. And as we were saying, that's a conference loss now. Normally the preseason or game ones are your regular games, but this is a Big Ten loss to a rival, and obviously we'll drop them down the rankings a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, that first half was pretty damn ugly. 0-0 at half. Now, to your point, Wisconsin had 12 first downs and whatnot, had 132-yard total yard, yards in general, had 90 rushing yards, did have only one turnover, but 3 of 11 on third down. Penn State only had one first down, and they were one of seven. So it was a rough one in a lot of ways. And, you know, by the end of the third, they actually had done, you know, they looked pretty damn good. But still, end of the third, 7-7, negative 2 yards rushing for Penn State. So I don't know if I'd put it all on the quarterback there, most of it anyway. But look at Penn State special teams. Blocked a Wisconsin field goal, missed a 23-yard field goal, kicked a 76-yard punt, and missed an extra point. So it was just all over the place.
It really was.
Came to, you know, that game, that team. And it was like, man, if both of them had kind of gotten the rust off, you know, week one, I bet you that week two game's just a little bit better at least. But, you know, that's part of it. Like you said, it is a conference game, and we love that. But you do have to kind of expect some of that every once in a while. Kind of going back and forth, you know, with this two-game combo, UCLA, UCLA, a three-point underdog at home, comes out with the win 38-27, and Texas just smacks around our Raging Cajuns 38-18. So, you know, Texas got off on the right foot, you know, with their new coach. But, you know, 26, you know, Johnson for LSU, 26 of 46. You look and say three touchdowns, 330, that's pretty good. But they did, you know, throw the ball 46 times. They could not really run that ball. 25 carries for 49 yards, which is really, you know, small for them. And on the flip side, they didn't ask Thompson to do much, but he did kind of show up when they needed him. But 47 carries for 210, 4.5 a clip, two touchdowns. That's UCLA's rushing game. So a lot of it came down to that. Is that Shar Bennett? Did that guy play for Michigan, or am I just I'm messing up the last name. There was a guy that was very – maybe that's his brother or something like that. But Thompson was good when he had to be. And, you know, UCLA, UCLA got a big win. We talked about how, you know, with the coach now in his fourth year or whatever, he needs some big wins. Well, he got one.
Yeah, he did. And I think that, you know, I'd heard that LSU had to take like a 10-hour bus ride earlier in the week to fly out. They obviously were practicing in a different stadium.
Do I got to get the violin going this early in the season?
I'm just saying for routines, it wasn't helpful. But what blew my mind was the fact that I think if you're looking just like on paper, like you can't tell me the UCLA has got better athletes. I don't think that's true. But they were the better, more prepared and well-coached team. I know that I guess that the middle linebacker in LSU like hurt his arm, so he was out. I mean, might have broke his arm. So obviously losing the middle linebacker hurts. But whatever defensive scheme LSU had been preparing for the whole season wasn't executed. Because there were a lot of plays where UCLA just made LSU's defense look bad. And it wasn't, again, I don't think due to a lack of skill. Again, I think that the LSU players are probably more talented, more skilled than any of the Bruins. But it skill set doesn't matter, Chris, if your preparation on how to handle plays isn't done properly. I mean, LSU started the game off. They got the 7-0 lead. And then the next play of the game, UCLA did this little, I don't know, like misdirection pass towards the tight end. And 75 yards later, it's a touchdown. It's like, well, holy shit, you know, you have a nice drive, you have momentum, and then you give up a defensive hiccup. That defense running back to own the game. And again, to continue my course of ripping on quarterbacks, I was really amazed because I have a good buddy who's a Badger fan, good buddy who's a Wisconsin, or not, I should say, an LSU fan. And he was amazed at how bad Johnson looked because this is the same quarterback who last year went in on the shoe toss game and won in the swamp in the fog.
That's right.
And that was against a good Florida team with a really beat up LSU roster. So he was really thinking like, okay, like this guy, you know, he finished the year off on a great note. He won that game in the swamp. Like he'll be good to go. But he for sure had game one jitters because there was a play. And I still remember it was like a 4 or 5 wide receiver set and UCLA blitzed. And the running back went up the middle and he was uncovered. And if Johnson just keeps his happy feet under control, that's a dink and a dunk. They're up 14-0. Or I'm sorry, or would have been, or or maybe 14-7. Okay. But there was a handful moments in that game where UCLA blitzed him, and this kid looked like a true freshman where he had no composure. And obviously, if you're UCLA and you see that, Chris, you're going to keep attacking. But for a dude that won the Swamp in a crazy game, to see no composure and to just, and I called him happy feet, because every time they're blitzing, there was just no pocket presence. You could tell, like, he was jittery. He was nervous. He had no composure. And when your quarterback doesn't have composure, it really doesn't matter what plays you call. So they couldn't get an offensive passing game going. They couldn't run the ball, and their defense was poorly coached. It was a really bad game from a team that, you know, obviously won the title a couple years ago. But I think Orgeron is seeing some effects, Chris, of losing, like, the really good assistant coaches he had. He's got to do a little bit of rebuilding, because that he got out-coached. I wouldn't say they got out-talented, but they definitely got smacked. And that's a fan base, like you talk about some other teams in this show, that their patience are small, whether it's right or not. There's always a short leash for a couple of schools, and LSU is one of them. And that would be a pretty tough loss to see if you're an LSU fan. You got to have higher expectations than that, I would imagine, even if it is week one on the road.
Yeah, I mean, 2020, in a lot of ways, you could throw it out. You know, for them, obviously, like many other teams dealing with the COVID scenario and whatnot, but also they lost a grip of talent. But this year, they don't have that exact same, you know, excuse/reason. So we're going to see how they bounce back. And it could have just been a bad first week. And, you know, obviously playing in the SEC, and the schedule that they have, they got plenty of games in the near future to prove it, you know, to say, hey, that was just a mediocre and a bad game, blah, 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 blah. Last night, Notre Dame got it done in overtime, 41-38. The Seminoles, tell me if you've heard this one before, wide left or wide right, you choose. It's up to you. Last night was wide left after their own coach iced their own kicker, although he was moving the ball upwards and it was a shorter kick. I actually got to say, I feel like in the pros, they would maybe call that a fumble, because – a lot of people go saying, well, the ball was, you know, his arm was going forward. That's not the debate. Of course, the arm was going forward. But when he had that guy in his face, to me, he was either doing one of two things, tucking the ball, which it looked like he was, or maybe he was trying to throw it at his feet or whatever. I'm not sure. But it did kind of look like he was tucking it and it fell out of his hand. So he was trying to tuck it, not, you know, the old tuck rule, not the ball was going forward. But either way, wide left, game over. And this was kind of crazy. It was a pass game versus running game. I mean, you had 264, you know, yards on the ground from the Seminoles, 48 carries, only 65 for Notre Dame, but then 366 through the air. You mentioned a former Wisconsin quarterback looked pretty damn good in this, you know, system, but a great back and forth game. You know, Notre Dame gets up. There's kind of back and forth, a lot of punts. Florida State ties it up. Then they go up. Then there's a field goal, and the Notre Dame ends up scoring a touchdown. It's 17-14. And then it's just back and forth, touchdown for Florida State early on, like three plays, 63 yards, buck 24 to start out the second half, 20-17, then 24-20. And then here is the problem here. Back-to-back possessions with interceptions that led to touchdowns. And next thing you know, it's 38-20, and you're thinking, okay, this game's over. Credit to Florida State and even Jordan Travis here after throwing those picks, but 15-play, 75-yard drive, got it within 10, and then another 12-play, 88-yard, 443 drive to get it 38-35. And during that drive, when they're right around midfield, Mackenzie Milton comes in off the bench. He's got a great story, obviously. You know, he throws a completion and, you know, gets him down to the Notre Dame 30. I'm looking at the stats right now, end up scoring the touchdown. So it was a great story that way. And they end up tying the game 38-38, though, because they were able to force Notre Dame, you know, to punt in a three and out. And man, Notre Dame, that stud tight end that they have, dropped the ball that maybe put him closer into range. And I say maybe, because they might have been closer in. Well, they would have been closer in the range. I don't know if they would have been able to get the field goal, but then, you know, 4 plays, 6 yards wide left.
Yeah, I think that if you're a Florida State fan, which neither of us are, I think this game would be encouraging. This is a school who's pretty much been a joke for the past 5-6 years. And maybe this game showed Florida State fans that we're getting our talent back. We need to contend with teams on a higher level, because Florida State really hasn't had a big win for what appears to be a long time now. So maybe that's encouraging, just to contend with a team who's normally up near on the top or level, and have a quarterback who is talented as hell. From an athletic standpoint, anyways, his passing maybe isn't that great, but he seems to be very athletic and very quick. So I think Florida State, you're seeing those athletes come back, but the defense still has some room to go, because not that Notre Dame's offense looked great, but when they would string together some pretty easy plays, their offense looked like it couldn't be stopped. So again, if you're a Florida State fan, I think you're seeing glimpses of what you need, and this is Norvell. He gets a regular year there. And again, he used to be at Memphis, and he did a great job there, so I'd assume he could do the same in Florida State. So I guess that's encouraging. Shore up the defense a bit. Obviously, the kicking stuff is just hilarious, that you would ice your own kicker. Who knows? If you're a Notre Dame fan, that game is pretty much a must-win. I know every year they're kind of that team that's on the brink of trying to upset one of the top dogs. And if you were to lose your first game of the year to a Florida State team, which is unranked, I'm not saying that would have cost them their whole season, but that would have been a bigger hurdle to jump over. I mean, you know, the Clemson has a bit of a hurdle losing to Georgia. At least Georgia's number five. If Notre Dame had lost to Florida State, who's unranked, that would have been tough. But you see the potential of Notre Dame. They have, again, like usual, a stud running back, a really talented running, a star tight end, a talented running back, a quarterback who's not going to impress you much, but can also be pretty sufficient. So it was a fun game to watch. I thought at the start of the game, Chris, it kind of took its turns, because Notre Dame's offense, the first drive of the game, they scored effortlessly, and it kind of went into a shelf until the end of the second quarter. And then Florida State had its moments, and then Florida State kind of dug itself a hole, and then Florida State comes out in the third quarter and takes the lead, and then they dig themselves a hole. So it truly was one of those college football games that swung on momentum and treated us with overtime, which we can't ever complain about at all. So it was a fun game to watch. And yeah, if you're Notre Dame, this was a must win for them. And if you're Florida State, I guess just keep working on the basics and I guess hope to make progress. So yeah, but that was a really enjoyable game. Concerns the only college football game on yesterday.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that rating too, because you know the game tightened up in the fourth quarter when not a whole lot of stuff was on. You know, tonight Ole Miss and Louisville go head to head at in about an hour and a half, give or take. My Minnesota Gophers put up a respectable 45-31 loss. There's a couple of handful of stuff that you could point to. The biggest one was just gift wrapping that defensive touchdown that kind of created the two touchdown scenario where you were getting back down to a touchdown, then they'd score again, yada, yada, yada. But I was kind of happy with what I saw. Speaking of comeback, we've mentioned a couple of comebacks like Florida State. This one was successful, though. Central Florida comes back on Boise State 36-31. That was a fun game down the stretch, no doubt about it. I did see some of that Eastern Washington UNLV game that went to double overtime. We mentioned North Carolina, Virginia Tech, and, you know, there's another quarterback that struggled week one, as you pointed out. I guess we can, you know, put this one in the bank right now. Oklahoma's defense is not top 20. Tulane's not a bummy team, though, I'll say that.
No, they're not.
They're not. They're definitely not. But 40-35, Oklahoma did find a way to grind that out. Speaking of grinding it out, Iowa State grinded it out over a bitter in-state rival. No, not Iowa. That's Northern Iowa, 16-10. And that wasn't basketball, where Northern Iowa has had some success. Oregon barely sneaks by Fresno State. Fresno State's a respectable program, but 31-24, they managed to get through that just barely. A couple other games to mention, and I'll let you kind of close out some of your thoughts if you have them. That Maryland-West Virginia game was pretty good. There's one more game that stood out to me that I did see that Texas Tech-Houston. Texas Tech actually looked pretty good. I saw a little bit of that. Baylor barely beat Texas Tech, but Washington. Washington gets beat. That Nevada-California game was good as well. But Washington, with some hype, we talked about them last week. I mentioned them. Your buddy mentioned them as well. I remember you saying that on the show. Washington jumps out of the gate, just gets beat, no problem. And then Illinois, who, you know, had a good opening, you know, whatever, win against Nebraska, that they let them come back in that game. They turn around and get beat by the Roadrunners. The Roadrunners have been, you know, a team for like a decade or something like that. They got their first win over a Big Ten team, 37-30. That one kind of opened up my mind. It's like, what?
Yeah, and I guess to wrap up a few other ones, Texas took care of our Raging Cajuns, and USC took care of San Jose State. I think part of that might have been, I know those were kind of like trendy picks and upset picks, but I think that both of those schools had built up such a nice little run the past couple of years that you really can't call them an upset pick. Like, I should say, I don't think that was a game that the USC and Texas coaches were sleepwalking on. Like, the Raging Cajuns last year were a legit top 20 team. And so if you're Texas and you're Sark coming off your first game, like, you really can't afford to, like, go easy on a team who had a top 20 defense in the country last year. And for USC, maybe for once Clay Helton was ready to go, because the San Jose State team won their conference for the first time in school history. So I think part of it might have been that those teams are, San Jose State, the Raging Cajun, are still probably good football teams. But I think the mystique and awe of being an underdog, I think that kind of gets worn off when you literally win your conference or finish top ranked 20. So I was hoping those games would have been better. But credit to, I guess, Texas, if you're Sark getting your first win, which wasn't an easy game. I know that score makes it look a little worse than that was. And USC, sure, I would have enjoyed watching that, but it's a Pac-12 channel, which for God knows what reason has still not been added to ESPN Plus or DirecTV or anything.
Well, I think we know the reason why. They're not interested in it.
So, yeah, and I was going through my scores, having my phone, like, all right, I can watch USC today. It's like, I can't. Actually, no, I'm not going to watch USC today. So that sucked. But, hey, Clay Helton won a game. You didn't screw up yet, so I'll give you credit. And Missouri, it wasn't pretty. They didn't cover, but Missouri did beat Central Michigan, and that's always been kind of my other team, so I'm happy they got the win. Again, it wasn't pretty by any means, and I don't think Central Michigan is that great, but they did pull off a 10-point victory at home in Columbia, and hopefully that's a good sign of things to come for the Missouri Tigers, because obviously Florida and Georgia are always a huge pain in the ass for that team.
Even though for week two, we'll start week two preview predictions, betting lines, and all that. Even though they're not at home, the Kansas Jayhawks, if they win this next game against Coastal Carolina, they're 25.5 underdogs. They're a live dog, though. That's where Stormin'. It probably still isn't where Stormin'. But anyway, we don't have the new rankings out just yet. This week technically is not over, plus it's Labor Day. I think it's a combination of that. But Ohio State and Oregon is probably the highest profile game of the week. Not under the radar, but still high profile. Iowa State in Iowa. Iowa State, the Cyclones, 4-point favorite. Boy, Iowa looked a lot better than Iowa State in week one. And let's see if this week one stuff, when you play a good team or whatever, or a mediocre team, whatever, let's see how it, you know, blends into the rest of September and the rest of the season ultimately. But in week two, this matchup right here, I'm really interested in. Don't sleep on Appalachian State as an 8-point underdog against Miami. I'm just saying, okay? We heard a lot about the Arkansas Razorbacks. Well, not a lot, but I heard a fair amount of folks talking about, hey, this program could be pretty decent this year. Texas has got to go on the road to them. We'll see, you know, what that leads. Washington, who will be out of the rankings, go, you know, 0-1 already. In Michigan, you know, play a primetime game on ABC. Right now, Michigan's a 6-point favorite. I'm really looking forward to that Utah-BYU Pac-12 after dark. I think that'll be a good game. Why don't we start with Oregon and Ohio State? And Ohio State, you know, their defense, they gave up a fair amount of, you know, they gave up over 200 rushing yards last week. They did apply some pressure, no doubt about it. There was a whole lot of passing yards given up from Oregon in week one to a tune of 298 against Fresno, mind you. That just kind of shows me something right there, because of course Oregon will look to run, you know, because that's the best thing to do against Ohio State, to hold that ball away from that explosive offense, which, you know, they put up 45 points. One of them was a defensive touchdown, but that's what happens after a while. And they put up almost 500 yards, you know, but total. And they managed to run the ball really well. What are your thoughts here? Because, you know, Oregon didn't look that great against a pretty solid Fresno State, you know, program. I shouldn't say that. And so is Minnesota, obviously. They're pretty solid as well. So I was happy my Gophers looked like they at least belong on the field with them. Well, how do you see this one breaking out? To me, you know, the over-under 63.5, I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm going over, but I'm not totally sure. What are your thoughts here? I like Ohio State to win. I'm just wondering if they can, once again, it's about a 14-point spread like it was last week against my Gophers.
Yeah, that surprises me a little, I guess, that I thought it might be a little bit lower. When you see rankings of 4-11, you'd assume the spread wouldn't be two touchdowns. But maybe that's just a sign of respect Vegas has for Ohio State. I thought that the quarterback, C.J. Stroud, last week against your Gophers, like, any true freshman or a kid making his first start would had some highs and lows. I thought, honestly, the Gophers defense didn't play that bad. Ohio State has a couple of playmakers who, if you give the ball an open field, are going to run for 80 yards against any defense. But I think, so he got his first start run, you know, under his feet. Obviously he's got the home field now, which will be beneficial. I'm sure that place will be sold out. And if you're Oregon, maybe you were caught sleepwalking a little bit, looking forward to this big game. But if you're Ohio State, I guess, just like usual, Chris, this is a team that, for the most part, always just wins these types of games to start off the season. And normally it's due to having a really solid offensive line and having, or I should say, a solid defensive line, having just a bunch of playmakers on offense. But I guess it's fair to say, is the Gophers' offensive line really good, which I believe it was, especially with the talented running backs that got hurt, which is really sad. Or is the Ohio State defensive line maybe taking a step down? Because that's always kind of been their little trick to success, is the Ohio State defensive line has pretty much dominated every big game it's ever played in. And I would say that, honestly, last week the Gophers ran the ball pretty damn effectively. And so if you're Oregon, I think, as you mentioned when you're talking about it, try to control the time of possession. Try to keep the talented offense off the field. And obviously, if you're in an away game, the more you can hold on to the ball, the more beneficial it'll be for the offense and everything altogether. So it's hard for me to say, because I wasn't able to catch much of the Oregon game. I didn't see any of it. I just saw the score was obviously not what an Oregon Duck fan wanted. But I think Ohio State will win, but I would definitely take Oregon with the 14 points. Just because if both these teams are ranked and one of them is having a quarterback who's playing his second game in college football, I don't see a blowout coming. I guess I'm kind of going all over the place here, but I think this will be a decent game. I think the Buckeyes win, but if you're Oregon, try to keep the ball in your hands and keep it a close game. So when the fourth quarter comes running out down 20, and yeah, I would take Ohio State to win, but the Oregon Ducks to cover.
I'd have to agree with you. You know, in 2019, Minnesota had one of the better lines, offensive lines, in the Big Ten. And they literally, and it went six deep because they would rotate a guy in there once in a while. And all six of them played last Thursday from 2 years ago. Last year, they missed two of their best guys, Dunlop and Fale. So it's a damn good offensive line, one of the better ones again in that. So yeah, we're gonna see it against a different team that has, you know, better athletes probably overall with Oregon. So then let's go to Iowa, Iowa State. Iowa looked really good in the opening, you know, week. Not so much for Iowa State. Not that they played garbage, but they just they didn't win cleanly, I guess you could put it. The over-under is 45. I actually think that's about right. I would say like 23-20, 20-17. We might have a weird 19-18 game. Who knows? But your biggest thing that stood out when we talked about Iowa State last year and then this year in our preview show for the year in week one was their offense. Well, you know, the reviews are in so far, and I don't have anything against Northern Iowa, but they only put up 16 points on them. Now, I understand you're not going to show all your plays, but you should be able to, as a top 10 team, put up more than 16. Maybe, you know, Northern Iowa will go unbeaten and they'll make the playoffs. I'm guessing not, though. How does this one play out? Iowa State will have the home field advantage. This is a 3:30 ABC Central Time. Cyclones favored by 4 at home.
This is a classic rivalry game. These teams literally play the second week of the year every year for as long as I can recall. And I guess that Brock Purdy, who I think last year regressed or didn't get much better, clearly didn't have a great week one. But I guess I found out that he does have like pretty much like a potential future NFL running back with him. So he's got help in his backfield again. But again, I'm just not sold on this team yet. I guess I'll watch how they play this week, but I'll take Iowa. Iowa's probably going to be defensively sound like they always are. And I'll take a defensively sound team. Iowa State's not like, you know, exactly Death Valley. Like, I mean, it's a good stadium, but I'll take a team with points on the road in a game that literally is almost always close. I know that's a cliche, but if you look up the past 10 times these teams have played, I bet there's maybe been only one or two times where this game wasn't close with 5 minutes to go. It is a cliche, but in this case, it's true. These teams always play each other tight. So yeah, I'll take a team who, and again, Iowa, I've normally rip Iowa's quarterbacks every single year on this show because they normally don't have great quarterbacks, but I will take the more sound defense. And I just, they would look better week one. This early into the season, Chris, sometimes you just got to go with momentum. And yeah. Iowa played a ranked Indiana team and looked pretty damn good. Iowa State, I mean, they got the win, but, and you and I is a respectable FCS team, but it's a lot of JUCO transfers playing against the seventh ranked team in the country. You probably should have been taking a little better care of them than you did. So I'll take the Hawkeyes plus 4. And I think you're getting a generous little hook there with getting the field goal plus 1. And that'll be a fun, close one to talk about. I would be shocked if whoever won that game wins the game by double digits. That normally is just not how that rivalry goes, my friend.
And I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to go with the Cyclones 20-17 or something like that. Or like I said, 16-13 or something like that. Let's pick up the pace. We are at the 53 mark, so let's keep that in mind. Washington, Michigan, Ronnie Bell is out for the season. He's a guy that the last 2 years have been, you know, has been, you know, fairly productive for Michigan. Washington, though, Morris, their quarterback, threw it all over the yard and not in a good way. Threw 3 picks, weren't really able to establish the run against Montana. That's right. I said Montana. They didn't have to get much out of their quarterback, who only threw for 105 yards, 12 completions. But that one was like, really? Huh. So this is how you're going to open up your season, which is this supposed to be a really good season. Who do you like here? I like Michigan to win this game. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say they are just going to dominate them. I think that you'll see somewhat of a motivated team in Washington look better than they had. But I like Michigan in this one. How about you? You're muted. You're muted, by the way.
I will I'll flip the script on this one, and I will go opposite of you. I'll take Washington. This team had a lot of preseason hype. Clearly, they did sleepwalk massively week one. And I'm just going to, I guess, go off the hype that this is supposed to be a legit good team. And Michigan losing an early game to start off their season would not be shocking at all. So I think we'll see a more motivated Washington team who really, if your goal is to surprise people this year and have a good season, going 0-2 is not really a good way for that to start. So I'll go with the upset pick here. I'll take Washington +6 and just hope that the hype I'd heard about them is true. And if they go 0-2 and lose to Michigan, then you're kind of researching to get your ducks in the same row before the Pac-12 season starts.
There you have it. And there is a late night game that really on the Pac-12 after dark. Utah, which is ranked right now and should be still once the new rankings come out, at BYU. Right now, Utah is a 7-point favorite. I'm really kind of eyeing that one to see how that goes. Just from a hardcore fan, San Diego State and Arizona favored by 1. That'll be competitive. Once again, late night. Missouri and Kentucky at home, 5-point favorite. Looking at it from the under the radar type stuff. Any other games stand out to you? You could go into it a little bit more, and then we'll get into our crappy pick of the week so we can wrap the show up.
I was just going to say that Missouri-Kentucky game will be close. Whenever they play, it's always kind of a dogfight. Kentucky's normally always known for their defense more than their offense. So I think that will be a fun game to watch. I think that the over-under is about as high as it should be, probably too high. Just from my memory, normally Missouri-Kentucky is normally always a low 20s head-to-head game where Kentucky's normally always just, and I haven't seen them play this year, but they're normally always having a wide receiver turned quarterback who loves to run the ball and a really good defense. And Missouri's offense normally struggles a bit there. So I'll definitely have that one on at 6:30 Saturday night. So I think that should be fun. I see Old Miss plays Austin Peay. So that's an easy cakewalk of a game. You mentioned the Holy War, the BYU-Utah. That's on ESPN, too. That'll be a super fun game. Those schools definitely don't like each other. So that would be a really fun game to turn on, my friend. And, yeah, I think we did a pretty good job of knocking these things out.
Upset alert, Miami, Appalachian State. Will Miami, dry their eyes and lick their wounds? They better be ready for Appalachian State. Sorry, I had to say that.
Well, all App State's going to do is play really solid defense and run the ball a ton. And this is a school that, yeah, is not afraid to pull off upsets, and they've done it quite consistently for a handful of last years. And, yeah, so, I'll be too wide because I'll have the Missouri game on, and that Texas-Arkansas game should be a lot of fun, too. Arkansas was maybe definitely looking ahead to Texas because they struggled against Rice, which probably wasn't a plan. But Arkansas-Texas, that should be your 6 o'clock Saturday night slates are looking really good if you're a fan of any of those schools we've mentioned. But yeah, it's maybe not quite as glamorous of a week two as it was week one. But, again, we were spoiled. We just talked about a lot of games in week one that felt like they're normally like mid-season games. So I can't complain, Chris, because this feels like a regular week two with a handful of games to pick from. We definitely got spoiled week one with all the top name schools we just finished recapping about for our show.
Yeah, no doubt. We're about a minute away from the hour mark. Let's get right into the crappy pick of the week and shut this thing down.
Well, as we said, 1-0 last week, so we're looking to go 2-0. Again, I name a crappy game for my co-host to pick. He does it. We've been doing this now for 7 or 8 years, and we're like legit at a 75% winning clip. So if you follow our nonsense of fun picks here, it has made you a ton of money of profit in the past handful of years, almost a decade now. So,
well, we haven't had the crafty pick for a decade, but yeah, it's been making money.
It's been for sure 6 or 7 years though. We're gonna get to that decade mark one of these times. And we talked a lot about Florida today. We talked a lot about Texas, where I live. So let's tie those states together, my friend. This is a 6 o'clock Central start on ESPN Plus. So I know most people have ESPN Plus nowadays. This game is in Miami, Florida. Your Hurricanes are not involved, my friend. But I feel that this is a lesser known party school playing another party school. It's in the Ricardo Silva Stadium. It is Texas State against Florida International. I'm gonna let you take it away because I know this is your part of the show. They'll do the alumni battle, but the Texas State, I think it's the Wildcats, against the Florida International Panthers. We have a Texas Florida matchup, Chris. You can get in the door for $12, and it's a 1-point spread. Sometimes you give me shit about picking games for the spreads. This is a true pick'em. What do you feel, my friend? Break this one down for me.
Well, first off, it's the Bobcats. Let's straighten that out right away. It's not the Wildcats. It's the Bobcats. And it is the Panthers, the Florida International Panthers, just to, you know, so we don't hear heat from the other side. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we normally don't see offense. It's normally set up like Texas State where they so far put up 20 points and give up 29. That's usually how that goes. They only rush for 79 yards, which is really not good in college football. Whereas Florida International, don't get me wrong, they played, you know, Long Island University Sharks, and this isn't college basketball. So that's the only thing I know is sports from Long Island. And that might just be street ball, but who knows? But they put up a ton of points. So this, you know, 48 points is weird for one of these bad, bad games. But as we know, they played a team that is just horrendous. So that plays into it. I'm going to flip the script a little bit. You know, on the surface, you're like, 48 points, man, that is awesome. Baylor is not what Baylor was a decade ago, right? Or not even a decade ago. Obviously, they've had their issues. They did have a nice year, I believe, last year. They kind of grinded their way back. You know, 2020 and 2021's gone so fast. Maybe that was 2019 that they actually got back and had a decent year. But anyway, the fact that they played them and played right there with them, and I'm talking about the Bobcats, tells me something. It tells me something. I am kind of wary of, Florida International's run game. Like I said, they played Long Island, but, they put up like a whole lot of rushing yards, 318 to be exact. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 3 guys that got more than 8 carries, or 5 carries, I should say. I don't know, man. This is kind of crazy that it's a 1-point game here on the spread. According to ESPN Power Football or Football Power Index, 55-44. So it's pretty much a pick 'em there too. Boy, oh boy, do I pick another home team. Man almighty. I'm going to go with a minor upset. And when we talk about minor, it's minor. Because, you know, the home field kind of plays into it. So, really, I'm going the Bobcats, not the Wildcats, the Bobcats, to go into Miami and get the job done. The Texas State Bobcats, just off what they showed me last week against Baylor, I'm going to go with that squadron to get the job done on the road. And what, you know, will be a very, very feisty team because, I mean, it's going to be something. It wasn't last year that the Baylor Bears bounced back. It was the year 2019. I'm looking at it right now. So maybe I should just throw out everything. But I'm going Texas Tech. I'm going with the road team.
Okay. This is not our most attractive battle of alumni we've ever had before, but I still want to knock it out. Florida International has the famous actor Andy Garcia, who's been in a handful of good movies. Mike Lowell, who is a former, I believe, winning World Series player for the Marlins and the Red Sox. Rajah Bell, who was a former Phoenix Sun great. T.Y. Hilton. That's obviously a very how he's not on the first list of people is mind-blowing to me. Google's really got to check their shit when they do these alumni lists. He's behind a lot of actors who I've never even heard of. That's a very big slap in the face to a great fantasy football wide receiver. And after that, Chris, there's really they got nobody. There's a lot of pictures of people who I don't know. There was a lady who must have been a Colombian beauty, Miss Colombia or Miss Universe in 2010, named Natalie Navarro. So Florida International is not exactly repping a great alumni. To wrap up with the Texas State alumni, a little more high powered. You got Lyndon B. Johnson, which is a former president. Paul Goldschmidt, who's a good baseball player. George Strait, who many people say is one of the better country singers of all time. Then they got a bunch of political pictures as well, which again is lacking. They have a former adult movie star named Alexis Texas. Someone may have heard of her. And after that, Shawn Michaels, the former wrestler. A bunch of guys in football pads I've never really seen before. So I got to tip the cap. It has to go to Texas State for having popular people in many different aspects of life. And yeah, this was not, again, the best battle we've ever had. And T.Y. Hilton being like 11th on a list of Florida International alumni is a very sad day for that man. So yeah. On that note, Chris, any final notes?
Nope.
All right. Well, my man Lane Kiffin and his boys, they play tonight in about an hour. He is out with COVID.
I'll cut the show if you keep doing this, okay?
I got my
finger on the stop button right now.
I'm sure he'll be texting plays from his phone or on a Zoom call, letting people know and throwing those hands up for a lot of points. So go hottie toddy, go hot toddy. Until then, we'll be back next week. As always, we appreciate our listeners and we love our support. And yes, hopefully we'll have some upsets to talk about for our week 3 preview. Until then, have a good night. Stay safe. Wear a mask. The boys are out tonight. Peace.